to the Chunder Living Podcast. This is late January 2015, and we are sitting with Mike from Mike's Pizza Kitchen. And I'm joined by Dan and Mike. Say hello, guys.
How's it going?
All right, so for anyone who is living in Chengdu as an expat, I'm quite sure that you probably already know about Mike's Pizza Kitchen. It is a very famous venue in Chengdu that hasn't been around for maybe that long, a couple of years, but certainly the main player within the pizza space in Chengdu. Mm. So we thought it would be great to sit with Mike and learn a little bit about the business and also about how maybe some other expats or entrepreneurs in the city can learn about what Mike has done to grow his business so successfully. So I'd like to start this by giving Mike the opportunity just to introduce yourself and say who you are and how long you've been in China and what your relationship with Chengdu is.
Well, yeah, obviously I'm Mike, the guy who makes the pizza. I came to China originally in the year 2000 as a student on a study abroad. And I did the year at USAC at Sichuan University. And that's actually when I met I Ching, and then, you know, who I later married. So we did the long distance relationship. I went back home, finished school. She went to Germany, got her MBA. We did the whole, you know, torturous, lovered across the ocean thing. And then, yeah, 8 years ago, came back here. We got married, and I've been here since then.
Amazing. 2000. So that's a really, really long time. Okay, so 8 years in Chengdu.
So Chengdu in 2000, what did you do when you wanted a slice of pizza?
Actually, that year, there was a guy, an Italian guy, who opened a place in Yulin called Dachiro's. Mm-hmm. It was right there on the main Yulin road. It was either Zhonglu or Nanlu, and kind of a standalone place. And yeah, he opened a pizza place, and it was actually pretty decent.
How far has pizza in Chengdu come since that time? Has it changed very much? I mean, your style, I assume, is different from his, but, you know, this 14 years, 15 years is a very long time.
Yeah. I don't know about Chengdu pizza as a style.
Great. That brings up a great point. So before you started Mike's Pizza Kitchen, describe what pizza was like in Chengdu. It was certainly nothing. There was no discussion about pizza. It was not something that people went out of their way to really get, from what I could tell. Hi-Fi Pizza was one place. Mutt's Nuts was another delivery place many years ago. But just describe before you started, you know, what told you that this is an area that I can really improve, and what was the kind of thought before you got started on this venture?
Well, honestly, for me, I mean, yeah, you know, Mutt's Nuts was there, and then Claudio at Peter Pan was making pizza at Peter Pan Italian Pizza. The biggest problem for me back then was, I don't know, still, when I wanted a pizza, what I got back then didn't satisfy my cravings for pizza. Mm.
Describe that. What didn't satisfy you? Or what were the things that were missing that you really appreciate?
That's actually kind of a interesting question. I haven't thought about it in those terms.
Okay. Is it like the toppings were low ingredients, or there was not enough sauce, or there was not enough substance to the pizza in some way, or is prepared incorrectly?
It's kind of all the above. It really seems like the way that a lot of... The reason I don't want to answer this question is now it's automatically going to sound like I'm talking shit about everything else that came before me, but...
I think that's kind of justified.
I don't think that's a problem, and if that's how you come off sounding, then I don't think it's completely undeserved.
Mutt's Nuts, I actually never had his pizza, never. Mm-hmm. I tried to order it, I'd call him on the phone, but he never answered the phone. So I know that other people had Mutt's Nuts, but I don't know what it tasted like. But I do know that the other pizzas that I did taste, they were just really, really bad. They were. I mean, the crust was, you know, floppy and undercooked, with just zero taste in the crust. The sauce was minimal and with no flavoring whatsoever. And that cheese was always like that waxy fake cheese stuff that, yeah, I mean, the pizza was bad. It was really bad, and I missed pizza and I wanted pizza. So
those are really great reasons to do this. Yeah. So when you started, you were just based in your house, is that right? Because I remember when you first started, I don't know how I found out about
it. Well, it wasn't my house, but we rented an apartment. So we were in an apartment, yeah.
So you rented an apartment exclusively for pizza production,
yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
That's a really interesting story. So what were you looking for, an apartment with kind of without furniture, like a bare bones place, that, and then you just put a big oven inside it? Or kind of what was the setting like?
Yeah, we had the oven inside until the neighbors complained. So then we put the oven out on the balcony, but Yeah, that's basically what it was.
But, yeah, are you at liberty to say where that apartment was? Or?
The police already know. It was in Europe City.
Okay. So, tell us about that. You had encounters with the police. Did neighbors call on you?
Yeah, actually, it was one of those things where, you know, pizza has a certain smell. And 99% of the people in that building loved it. I mean, you know, they would come wandering through the halls like, I smell pizza, and just knock on our door. You know, they just found us because of the smell. You know, we weren't exactly giving out flyers or anything or advertising our presence. But, you know, 99% of the people loved it. And, you know, they'd follow the smell, follow their nose and order a pizza. One girl didn't. And so she's the one that came in, you know, and asked us to do something about it. So we shut the door, and that wasn't enough. So she called the management, and, you know, the management just said, can you do something? So we put the ovens on the balcony and put fans up, but that still wasn't enough. So, yeah, she did call the police. And the police talked to my wife and...
And walked away with two pizzas?
No. Yeah. Actually, we were closed that day.
That's an interesting standpoint, evading the police as a pizza startup.
I mean, it was one of those things where there wasn't really anything they could do because... I mean, the idea of, I don't know. I actually don't know how. You'd have to ask my wife, and she was supposed to be here. But
okay.
She
had all right. That would
I,
be
was, I wasn't there for that actual part of the conversation.
But for somebody who's...
The end result is we were lucky.
Yeah. So I mean, for somebody who is running a bathtub gin type operation out of their homes, is there a bigger danger than just being walked in and on by the police? Like, could they... hit you with an ordinance or something because of the health violations or whatever, and that didn't happen to you though.
No, but the thing is, I think Chengdu is in kind of a special, and not even just Chengdu, big cities everywhere where the retail rent and commercial rent is so incredibly restrictive. I mean, you know, there are thousands of startup restaurants in people's apartments. It's actually a really common thing. I mean, there's one in there's a Thai restaurant in a master house apartment right down the street. There's a really good European restaurant in Feng Xiaodi. I mean, I love these places. There's a really good Chinese one in I think it's in Luofu Shijia. I mean, and these are just people that, because rent is too expensive, and rent is incredibly expensive here, they choose to just do it out of their house. And
it's kind of an amazing underground eatery scene. I've noticed that also, how there don't seem to be any... Either there are no zoning laws, or they're just not enforced. I see a lot of, like,
it's commercial one of those
enterprises
where,
and residential buildings and things like that.
I mean,
Poly Center is a great example of that.
If
well.
You don't cause a problem with it, you know, as long as you don't piss your neighbors off too much and, you know, make it a headache for the management and make it a headache for the police, then they will, for the most part, let you exist, it seems. Don't anybody take that as...
Right.
But...
So at what point were you making pizzas in the apartment and you realized this could be really big, this could be a full-time gig, this has the opportunity to grow into something really, really meaningful? At what point did you realize that?
We didn't, actually.
When you took a big jump to get this location, which we're sitting in now, right? What was the point where you said, now we're going to invest a lot of money, we're going to hire a lot of people, we're going to expand?
It was actually a fluke. Every day when anyone asked me, are you going to get a real restaurant, I always told them no, because I didn't want it. I just wanted to stay small. I wanted to, you know, keep things controlled. The number of pizzas, the maximum capacity we could do with only a delivery operation and no dine-in, it was, I mean, things were the way I liked them. Our overhead was super low, and, you know, I was happy.
Were you working on the side at that time as well?
By that time, no. Originally, when I started the pizza place, you know, I was still doing other stuff, but... Yeah, it didn't take very long for me to realize that I had to be there.
You have some interesting side gigs, which I know very little about. So you are from Las Vegas, right?
Yeah.
So one of the things about yourself is that you are an Elvis performer, or is that right?
Yeah.
How do you describe that? Tell me about that. I find that really interesting. And there's actually a picture of Elvis right behind you, which says, what happens in Vegas started at Graceland. So I'd love to hear kind of what your, you know, background is on Vegas and on Elvis.
on a completely different note, I guess.
Totally different note, because I noticed it used to be on your website. There used to be a link to something,
yeah.
to something Elvis related, like some kind of performance.
That, yeah, that, it actually had the old picture of me doing my Elvis stuff. on that website.
So that means you must be like one of the top Elvis guys in China. If I mean,
well, in China, I don't know. But I was the only one that I knew of in Chengdu. But yeah, I've got the whole jumpsuit, and I used to. I mean, that was one of the things I loved to do. So I grew out the sideburns, and people would pay me money, and I'd go sing Elvis songs.
So, preparing for the interview, I read through your whole FAQ section, which is just a fucking blast to read. In response to a question about discounts or deals, you say the only days there will be discounts or deals are on the day the king was born and the day that he, I forget the way you put it on the site, but the day he mysteriously disappeared or whatever. Are those discounts for real, or is that kind of, is that more tongue-in-cheek?
Honestly, if someone ever asked, because what I did, I have done that on, you know, where the king pizza, because the king is called the king pizza because it's actually a Memphis-style pizza with the barbecue sauce.
All right.
So nobody does, but
well, we've got a lot of questions about the pizza. We'll do that.
That is the pizza that you would get discounted on Elvis Day. Yeah.
All right. So
that leads us just into the menu, I guess. We were really interested. You know, Dan pointed out something to me that so many of the pizzas are named after fairy tales, I hadn't realized that. You know, it makes sense. How did you develop the naming convention for the pizzas, and how do you decide, you know, when to make a new pizza or what the recipes are? Because as I understand it, most of the pizzas are pretty unique to you and to Mike's Pizza Kitchen.
The first six pizzas on my menu are 100% not unique, or maybe just four or five. They are pizzas that I did at Metro Pizza in Las Vegas, where I, you know, that's where I worked when I went to college, high school and college. But then everything after that has been other stuff that I, you know, came up with on my own for whatever reason.
The ingredient, the recipe for it is not original, or name?
No, those topping combinations.
Those topping combinations.
But as far as, no, the sauce, the cheese, you know, I buy cheese. I buy the best cheese I can find here, but mm-hmm. you know, I don't make my own cheese. But the sauce and the crust, no, those ended up being completely different from what I started with. I had to develop some that worked here.
But are you constantly experimenting with new combinations to make new recipes? Okay, that's interesting.
But before we go on to
90% of them never make the menu.
Naturally, sure.
Before we go on to ingredients and stuff, could you tell us a little bit more about the fairy tale background? What inspired the names?
Actually, that's, I don't know.
Arbitrary?
Like a lot of people here, I did a brief gig teaching kindergarten.
Okay.
And one of the things I noticed when I was teaching these kids is they knew all the Western fairy tales. They, you know, they knew Goldilocks, they knew the Three Bears, they knew them. And, you know, I know that that's not part of Chinese culture, but that's part of Western culture that has carried over and become somewhat universal. And, you know, when I was, you know, I mean, most people like fairy tales. I liked fairy tales uh-huh. when I was a kid. And
that's really cool.
Know, some kind of that kind of, I was just, I really liked that crossover, the fact that kids here already knew what these fairy tales were. And yeah, I mean, I see that when the little Chinese kids come in here and they can recite, you know, they're, you know, like, I want a, you know, a Snow White, I want a Goldilocks. And, you know, they know all the names. And I don't know, I like that.
We like it too. I think it's a pretty interesting trademark. And
except for Rumpelstiltskin, nobody knows who he is.
Oh, really?
I'm a steamroller, baby. I'm bound to roll all over you. I'm a steamroller, baby. I'm bound to roll all over you. I'm gonna inject your soul some sweet rock and roll.
So now we can talk a little bit more about ingredients.
Well, the answer is it's a nightmare.
It's a nightmare.
Yeah, so what's involved with producing the ingredients? I mean, what length do you have to go to get high quality ingredients? Are they really, really difficult to get? Which things are most difficult to get?
The biggest thing is, once you find it, keeping it stocked. And especially as our capacity has increased, none of the local Chengdu suppliers have really been able to meet the demands that we've needed. So like for our flour, for example, we had to go directly to, you know, the manufacturer, and we have to, you know, act like we're a distributor. We have to buy a metric ton of flour at a time. Because I've tried every single flour in this country, and this is the only one that, you know, has the right protein content for the elasticity that I need for a hand-tossed pizza dough.
Wow.
And so, yeah, we buy it directly from the manufacturer a metric ton at a time, and then we have to store a metric ton of flour because nobody in Chengdu stocks that much for us.
So would this be much simpler if you were just in a different part of China or a different city, or is this something that Chinese pizza makers... Or pizza makers located in China would have to deal with no matter where they are?
I don't know. I can't speak for anywhere else because, mm-hmm. I mean, but I do, you know, I kind of think that Chengdu's got to be better than Kunming for something like that, mm-hmm. but I doubt we're as good as Shanghai. It seems, you know, from what I've seen in Shanghai, they're able to get their hands on a lot of stuff there that we can't get here.
One of the great items on your menu that I recommend to people a lot, and that I order myself a lot, is the cookie. And I was explaining this to Dan. I don't think he's ever had it before. The most unique thing about it, if anyone's never had it, is it's a giant cookie which comes in a pizza box and is cut into slices like a pizza is. Where did you get the idea for that? Does that come from somewhere else? I've never seen that done before.
That comes from when I was 5 years old. When I was a kid, that was my favorite thing in the world to make was chocolate chip cookies. And every Sunday, I'd make a huge, you know, my family, we had 7 kids. So, yeah, I'd make a huge batch of cookies, you know, for the whole family. And I would start out making normal-sized cookies, but that just takes so long. And by the time, you know, I was done with the big batch, I was usually just making monstrous cookies. And, I don't know, that's the way I liked cookies when I was a kid. So
that's a really cool, interesting
thing. When I came here, that's what I did.
The cookie's also a good example of how your menu has expanded so considerably in the time that you've been running this business. So it started, I think, with the cookie, and then maybe sandwiches were kind of the first thing. And then it's gone into many different areas now. How do you decide what areas to expand in away from pizza? I mean, is there a certain criteria that you need, like really something exceptional or something that suits pizza? Or how do you think about expanding beyond pizza?
Well, the sandwiches happened because I was tired of eating pizza. And so I took my pizza bread, or I took, you know, my pizza dough and made it into a focaccia, a flatbread, and I just started making sandwiches. So I was eating them for, you know, months before I put them on the menu. And it's, you know, it kind of goes hand in hand, though, because it's fresh bread. It's baked when, you know, when you order it, like a pizza would be anyway. And then, so the sandwiches and the pizza, I actually think, kind of coincide pretty well together. As far as other stuff, though, like the reason we put salads, some people want salads.
So you respond to market demand for some items.
But like for pastas and for, you know, we basically put those on the menu so people would have, you know, because when, like Charlie was saying about the, you know, the wait time, it is pretty normal these days to wait 90 minutes, 2 hours. And that's just because there are that many people waiting in line in front of you, and some people don't want to wait that long for me to make their pizza. And, you know, if they don't want to wait, then the salads and the spaghettis can usually come out pretty quickly. So those are, and we're actually working on more options like that don't require me to make it individually, that, you know, then people who don't want to wait 2 hours can have something else or have something while they wait.
One thing that's great about your restaurant, I think, is that anytime anyone comes inside here, I think the first thing they see is you. Because you're not hidden in the back, you're not in a secluded kitchen, you are right in front, kind of in the center of the restaurant, and you are always there spinning pizza dough. And that's kind of like just a famous fixture of your restaurant. I think that's like a really amazing addition, which gives a lot of legitimacy and authenticity to your restaurant. And it feels like people are in the kitchen with you. Now, you know, considering the wait time, as considerable as it can be, obviously you're just far more committed to, you know, quality and taking the time that it requires to do what you want to do, you know, in the way that you want to do it, rather than just, you know, pumping things out as quickly as you can. How do you feel about that? I mean, does a 90-minute wait time bother you, or is this just the way it is? Or how do you handle this situation, or how do you approach it?
Well, like I was starting to tell Dan before we started recording, I just did a pizza trip in New York, and my heroes in the New York pizza scene are the people who kind of do what I'm trying to emulate, where they are actually the ones making all the pies themselves too. And if you go to DeFara's, which is one of the, I think, more famous places in Brooklyn, the guy there is Dom DeMarco. He opened that place in 1965, and he pretty much makes every pizza himself. And there, it's often a three-hour wait time. But he, you know, same kind of thing. He is committed to being there himself and doing it himself, and he wants to work and is willing to work and loves to work. And
amazing. So you're upholding the pizza legacy.
I don't know.
In a way, it sounds sort of like that.
I'm trying, but that is something that I believe in, is that real food should be made by real people. Mm. And I think it makes a difference when it is.
Yeah, you, there's, I don't think I copied it here, but there was one portion of your FAQ where you sound a bit like a Luddite, kind of bashing the modern pizza scene in the way it's made by machines and there's not enough human touch in it, and it's made in advance and then just heated by heating lamps. Does this extend beyond the world of pizza for you, or is this something that you feel mainly passionate about in the realm of pizza?
Well, food. I think food needs to be made by humans for humans. You know, without corporations, we wouldn't have iPhones, and we wouldn't have, you know, the amazing things that computers can do, and, you know, technology has advanced in amazing ways because of the power that corporations put behind it, and, you know, like the airplane industry wouldn't exist the way it exists, the car industry, you know, without these corporations and these, you know, the mass manufacturing model. And I think that's a great and wonderful thing for the world. I think the world's a better place for it. I don't necessarily believe that's 100% true for food.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you guys remember the Taco Bell thing. Was that in the 90s or when they discovered that, you know, the Taco Bell 100% ground beef was really 90% sawdust?
And I remember that.
Yeah, you remember that, right? I don't remember the exact details of it. But the point is, there's a corporation there that made a decision to put sawdust in people's food. And an individual restaurant owner would never make that decision. An individual human being who is giving food to another human being would never make that decision.
Mm-hmm.
But a board of shareholders did make that decision.
Right, so there's a loss of accountability within the corporate structure. And that's obviously not present here, since you're really kind of literally face-to-face with everybody.
More on your personal philosophy, because, like I said, reading your website's a trip. The question, do you have any vegetarian options, is your response is no, and then why not? I didn't work my way up to the top of the food chain to be a vegetarian. how much of that is serious and how much of that is tongue-in-cheek? There's a much more substantial answer after that.
The more substantial answer after that is the more important part. And for me, the only important part of that, are you a vegetarian?
No. Don't worry.
All right. Well, the question I always want to ask vegetarians when they come in and ask me, are there any vegetarian options, is when they lobotomized the part of your brain that, you know, allows you to eat meat and crave meat and want meat, did they also lobotomize the part of your brain that allows you to read?
This is a quintessential part of your character, which we definitely wanted to talk about.
Which I try not to say, because I know that some people will be offended by that. But the point is, you don't have to ask if there are any vegetarian options. You just, it's pizza.
Mm-hmm.
You tell me what to put on it, and that's what I'm going to put on it.
Mm-hmm.
You want, you know, mushrooms and red peppers on a pizza, you know, just tell me. You know, give me a large pie with mushroom and red peppers. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't have to ask me if there's any meat in the red peppers.
Right, right. It's
a red pepper.
This sort of points to something that I noticed in your FAQ, is that it seems like all of these, I would like to call them tirades. They seem like they're culled from actual conversations that you've had with these people. They're written, like you just heard, in a back and forth manner. It sounds like you're just sick and tired of answering these frequently asked questions. So I found a bit of the vegetarian part. This is how it ends. So the rule is, if you ask that same question three times or more, I put meat on it. Lots of meat. I cover your veggies in so many layers of bacon and sausage that the broccoli will produce hemoglobin, breathe oxygen, and look at you with accusing but still loyal puppy dog eyes. I'm struck by just the realness of this answer, but also... You like to write. Your FAQ section is filled with... I did a word count, more than 2,600 words.
I didn't know.
And that's like more than like
Most articles on Chengdu Living.
Yes, most articles on Chengdu
Living. But those were, you know, one at a time over the space of 4 years now.
Yeah, so I mean, there are gems all over the FAQ. And I mean, do you have any experience writing? Or what did you study in college? Or what's your background in writing?
College, I studied languages, you know, French and Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
No, I mean, I've always enjoyed writing. I do, you know, I used to think I would write, but...
Mm-hmm. Well, now you found your niche style, that's for sure.
Going back to your the kind of standoffish personality that you show a lot of times, one thing we wanted to ask was, there was a kind of debate on Chengdu Living, I guess about a year ago. It was a pizza debate, and I'll link to that in the show notes. And I thought it was interesting. It was kind of where you did a lot to defend your process and the way that you approach quality and your business. And one of the things that's unique about you is you really stick, you know, you strongly adhere to your principles. Like, you're a very principled person, and you're not willing to compromise on your principles. And I think that's a really cool and interesting thing about you. One of the participants in the discussion on Chengdu Living was a guy named Wes, I guess, who it sounded like knew you.
Mm-hmm.
And he defended you and said that Mike has an occasional temper tantrum, and, you know, that seems to be just like a part of your character. And my question is this just like a really stressful job, and is it because of that, or are you just prone to this kind of stuff in general? I mean, I just want to, you know like how stressful your position is in taking this strong position on quality.
This is one of those questions that I'm a little bit worried about answering, honestly. But the answer is, many times the outbursts are more to change behavior than they are based in actual anger. You know, for example, the ones that they're talking about on there, one of them was, I think, the hand-washing incident where, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, you see there's a sink right there. And the reason that sink is right there in my line of sight is so that none of my people can walk into my kitchen without washing their hands first. And washing their hands is something that I never thought I would have to, A, teach people how to do, you know, as in, you know, actually use soap and actually spend enough time, you know, because they just tend to drizzle a bit of water, shake it off, and run. You know, so A, I never thought I would have to spend as much time teaching people how to wash hands, but B, just the idea that I actually, you know, they won't do it unless I force them to. That is one of those behavioral changes that just, and you know, I can't. It's a restaurant. I can't have. I just, it has to stop at that line. There has to be that line right there.
Mm-hmm.
And it is one of those things where, you know, if people would sneeze, my employees, if they would sneeze, they would just do the open cough everywhere.
Right.
And so I'd have to tell them, you need to cover your mouth, and then you need to wash your hands. And, you know, then the next day I see them cough or sneeze again and still doing the same thing, and I ask them nicely again. And no, finally it got to the point where someone sneezed or coughed, you know, just everywhere, and I grabbed his arms, I pulled him over to the sink, I, you know, screamed, if you're ever gonna fucking, you know, I mean, I lost it. It never happened again.
That seems like a very justified situation to show anger.
I mean,
and on behalf of everyone who eats your pizza, I'm glad that you take a strong position on that.
I mean, I wish it wasn't necessary, but it worked. And, you know, by the time I'd gotten to that point, you know, you're out of options. It worked. And, you know, I mean, and you, if you read down on my on Dianpin, you know, the Chinese comments, Chinese customers notice that, you know, all my delivery people come in and immediately wash their hands before crossing into the, you know, into the food zone. They notice. It makes a difference, and they feel better because of it. So it... Yeah, I do. I mean, I know that some, you know, if you're on the other side of the debate that anger is never justified in any situation whatsoever, then, you know, that's the side of, you know, then obviously the way I modified behavior in that situation would be wrong, but it worked.
Yeah,
and
I think
it was a change that needed to happen.
Right. I think the quality, and even more important than that, the fact that your pizza won't be making people sick or ill is more important than pretty much anything else.
There are so many things you can't control with food safety that, yeah, everything that you can control, you have to. You just have to. I mean, you know, the largest E. coli outbreak in America was caused by an employee who didn't wash his hands. And it's not like his, you know, I guarantee he was trained properly. And I guarantee that, you know, everyone up the line, you know, they had systems in place, but it's just one person made a mistake and then people died. And so, yes, everything that you can control, you need to. And, you know, which is why having a sink in a visible place is something that I kind of insist on.
Yeah. Well put. You're good at defending your position. You did the same thing on the forum, too. I really liked how you just came right out and you just very much spoke from the heart and just defended yourself very straightforwardly and did not dodge, you know, any of the accusations or any of the things that you were charged with. Mm-hmm. And I think that earned you a lot of respect. I certainly know that the people I know who read that thought that it was really cool that you just come out and speak for yourself and just say what you think.
Yeah, I had a little bit of a flashback of that thread when last week or 2 weeks ago, the Redbeards folks had somebody complain that I think Nick in the kitchen had some outburst, and both Jesse and Nick came out, and I think they similarly defended themselves pretty well. But for business owners in Chengdu, or people who are trying to get into the food services industry or whatever, do you have any recommendations or tips in terms of customer relations or management, anything along those lines? From your experience the past couple of years, what have you learned?
The biggest thing for me has always been food first. Everything else will come along later. I mean, you know, some people will appreciate what you're doing, some people won't. But yeah, if you focus on the product and you focus on, I mean, for me, I just, you know, food first, that's it. And I really don't worry about anything else. I mean, some people are nice, some people aren't. There are 99.9% of customers I get along with great.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, 999 out of 1,000, that's pretty much the exact number. And then there's that 1 out of 1,000 that, you know, ruins your week, but you put it behind you.
Right. And one thing I notice also about your business is that you seem to be kind of the de facto leader among the expat eateries in Chengdu. So there are a lot who are trying to kind of emulate your success in different areas of food. So they're not direct competitors, so you guys can kind of work together. I think one example of that is Redbeard Burgers, I think, which we're all a fan of. Another is the Johnny Five Donut Shop, which is a neighbor of yours. But tell me a little bit about the help that you offer to these new people. And I know that people want to come and open a restaurant or do some kind of niche food product here. And they look to you, I think, for expertise and guidance on how they can do this and grow their business successfully. Are you trying to build, like, you've done so much to help Chengdu in this area. Do you have any thoughts on other people kind of doing the same thing?
The two that you mentioned are actually, we're partners with both of them. So we're invested in Nick and Jesse, and we're invested in Johnny. I don't know. I mean, and the reason why is, you know, yeah, we went with burgers. We wanted to do the same thing that hopefully that I was doing with pizza, that, you know, again, real food prepared by real human beings. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Nick and Jesse were on board with that same kind of philosophy. And yeah, so we got them going. And the same thing we want to do with John and his donuts.
How did those relationships start? Tell us the origin. How do you know Nick and Jesse, and how do you know Johnny?
John, I've known for years. I knew him back when I lived in Vegas.
Oh wow!
Yeah, we brought him out here.
So you recruited him to Chengdu.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
For the donuts.
Amazing.
And then Nick and Jesse, we met here. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we were just friends. We hung out, and they were teaching at EF, I think it was. And Jesse was playing her harp at the Ritz-Carlton, and yeah, I don't know. We talked about ideas and came up with this.
So this is kind of like a really big, I mean, a significant revolution in the Chengdu food scene. I mean, when I came to Chengdu, and I came much later than you in 2005, but when I came, I can't even think of any restaurants which were opened and managed by expats. There was like Peter's Tex-Mex and places like that, which had Chinese owners and Chinese managers. And now we're kind of in this era where the landscape of food is really changing significantly because people are coming from everywhere to open interesting and, in many cases, really authentic restaurants. this has been, I mean, you have a lot to do with, I think, this change, especially in the last 2 or 3 years. Where do you see this going? Are you going to invite or kind of help more people start businesses? Or do you think there are other people who are trying to do what you're doing?
None of my wife has anything to say about it.
I think she's done with that game for now.
Where do you see this going, though? Let's say like 2-3 years from now. Is this going to continue? Are there going to be like, is it going to be like Shanghai with hundreds of different restaurants from people all over the world? Or is it, you know, where do you see it going?
Well, the thing that is awesome about Chengdu at this point in time is they're still kind of in that middle range where you don't need $1 million to open a restaurant. I mean, in Shanghai, you really do. The rent is so expensive there, and just everything's so much more expensive in Shanghai. You can't do anything with less than $1 million. But here, yeah, the landscape's a little bit, you know, more friendly to smaller startups and smaller, you know, small-time entrepreneurs. I mean, you've seen the size of this restaurant. It's tiny. But, you know, we make it work. We do the best with what we have here. And, you know, we're lucky that we can even get this tiny little slice of space in, you know, in Tongjilin and Chengdu. So if things stay the way they are right now in Chengdu, where, you know, smaller startups can actually thrive and flourish, then that would be a good thing, I think. However, if we do end up being like Shanghai, where you know only the millionaires get to play ball, then I don't know. It's going to be a different. It'd be. I mean, you know, there are lots of great restaurants in Shanghai. But it'd be a different landscape. It'd be a different feel. It'd be a, you know, completely different business models. I mean, it's like the difference between Manhattan and Brooklyn, kind of. You go to Manhattan, and there are all these, you know, any new place is, you know, got to be very slick, very trendy. You got to have some kind of, you know, like I went to. What's that place called? Don Antonio's, which is right around the corner from Broadway. And, you know, that, I mean, you know, super amount of money pumped into that place. And, you know, the Caputo Flower helped sponsor them. And, you know, they were trained by the guy from Naples. And, you know, awesome. I mean, the pizza was awesome. It was really good. But it was money. It was just lots and lots of money.
That business wouldn't have survived on the pizza alone.
Then I went across to Brooklyn to Lucali's. And, you know, this is a guy, he had a regular 9-to-5 job. And after his 9-to-5 job, he went to his restaurant and built it. He built that whole restaurant, even the oven, with his bare hands. And, you know, so of course, yeah, I mean, I'm going to take Luke Hollies over Don Antonio's any day, because it's a real human being who, you know, he makes the food. He's there. He made my calzone himself. He, you know, put it in the oven. And, yeah, and it was an oven that he built with his bare hands. I mean, that's amazing. And
so did you sort of gain an appreciation for that philosophy at your first pizza job at Metro Pizza, or was that acquired some other way?
Ironically, yes. And I say ironically because since the time that I worked at Metro Pizza, they have actually expanded, and they've got like 14 locations or something like that now in Las Vegas, and so they've kind of gone the other way. But when I was there, the owner, they only had 3 locations, and the owners were very present. I mean, you know, John would often come in the back and make dough with us. And, you know, he's the owner of a, you know, pretty decent-sized company. He doesn't have to be back there making dough, and he doesn't, you know, every Thursday he was the one who'd come and stand in the pie line and actually make the pizzas. And, you know, he was there because he wanted to be there and actually still wanted to make the food. And, yeah, I mean, I learned a lot from him.
Mm-hmm. So now that Redbeard is focused on burgers, Johnny Five is focused on donuts, Mike's Pizza Kitchen is obviously focused on pizza. Is there anything else in your head that you think Chengdu is missing that should really have? Like, what do you really wish
What's
that
the
someone
next
would
frontier?
Do?
I don't know. I do think that, you know, all the other major cuisines, they will become represented here. You know, I just did a trip to Vietnam, and I came back wishing there was a Vietnam Vietnamese restaurant.
Yeah,
say that again.
Apparently there is one in Tongjilin.
I drove past it the other day.
Yeah, I haven't been there yet, but, you know, so like I said, you know, I came back thinking, oh, we need Vietnamese food, and then lo and behold, someone's working on it. Now, there already have been 2 Vietnamese places that I know of that have already gone out of business. There was, the Parrot was originally Vietnamese, and now it's a hospital. And then there was another one in close to Shanghai Garden that doesn't exist anymore.
I have thought the same thing, actually. There were 2 things which I always thought were really missing. One is pho, Vietnamese, and the second is authentic Mexican food.
Yeah.
And that's another thing that I really wish that someone would do that. But you and the trio of businesses that you're involved in are clearly American, like Americana, classic, traditional American kind of food. I wonder if we won't see any more, you know, like a American breakfast place or some kind of other, you know, restaurant with a specific focus like that.
Yeah, I'd like to see that.
Yeah, I think we all would. But yeah, I think you have fostered an environment that it definitely proves that this kind of thing is possible, and it definitely gets people's imaginations going.
For someone who's interested in opening, starting a restaurant, or just a business, or just an entrepreneur, you know, any entrepreneurial enterprise in Chengdu, do you have any advice for them just based on the things you've learned, like pitfalls or obstacles that you've overcome, or tips that you can convey to people to help them kind of see some of the success that you've had?
The biggest piece of advice I have is work. Just know that you have to be there and physically work. You know, because that's, I've seen so many places start up and fail because the owner, you know, the entrepreneur has this great idea for, you know, this food that, oh, they don't have this food here. We're going to do it and it's going to be great. But then, you know, they think they're just going to teach someone else how to make it and then just sit back and watch the cash roll in. And it never works out that way. I mean, I've seen so many places already fail because that was their idea. They thought they didn't. I mean, you have to be there. You have to be willing to do the work. And if you are willing to do the work, then I do believe you will be rewarded for it. But yeah, you just got to be willing to work. It's a lot of work.
Yeah, there's a lot to be said for just using your own hands to build it rather than trying to train someone else or have someone else do it. And that's been a clearly like a pillar of your business, just having you always be here, like always doing what you do from opening to close. So in closing, we'll wrap this up. I'd love to know your closing thoughts. And what pizza would you recommend? I'm just kidding. I know you don't do that. I'm just totally kidding. No recommendations.
I was going to say, you read that. Yeah.
What?
I didn't read
it. I read it. Charlie did it.
I didn't read that, thank you. No, I'm just kidding.
One serious but a little bit more lighthearted question. How do you get a sandwich named after you?
You just have to be my friend.
All right. Do the ideas come from you or the namesake?
The ideas for the sandwiches come from me. And then the only exception to that is the Callum. And that was actually Callum's idea. He just called up one day and he was like, I want a ham and cheese sandwich. I'm like, dude, I'm not making a ham and cheese sandwich. That's boring.
And then he must have said something to entice you. What was that?
He said, I really want a ham and cheese sandwich.
Okay, so there's no special ingredients. Okay.
No, I mean, I you know, I was like, well, you know, can I put cheddar in it? He's like, all right, put cheddar in it. Cheddar's better. I'm
like, how about another one, like the Jovian, for example? That's one that I've ordered, and Jovian's a friend of mine. How did that happen? Was that you had an idea? And how's Jovian or someone get involved in something like this?
Well, Jovian, I knew Jovian from back in the day before I even started making pizzas. But his favorite pizza was always the King Pizza. And so when I was starting with sandwiches, I was like, well, you know, how about you try this as a sandwich? You know, it's the same ingredients as the King Pizza, just as a sandwich. And he liked it and ordered it, and we got named after him.
Beautiful. So do you have any closing thoughts for anything you want to add or anything you want to say about your business or what's coming up or anything you want to add to this before we wrap up?
No. I don't know.
Okay, great.
I think we covered quite a bit, but first, just want to thank you a lot for meeting up with us today. I think this gives people a better idea about your history, your personality, and if anybody's listening to this, come say hi to Mike in Tongzhuan.
Right, come to Tongzhuan, and you can order your pizzas by telephone, and the phone number and menu are available on the website at Mike's Pizza Kitchen.
Definitely check out the website. Definitely check out the whole website.
But yeah, the only thing I would add to that, I guess, is actually thank you guys, because I do think that Chengdu is a much easier place to live in because of your guys' website, Chengdu Living. And, I mean, the form that you make available and the fact that so many of the questions that people have, you know the answer to, Charlie. I mean,
that's true. It's a virtue of,
you know,
being
a lot of cities that don't have a Charlie.
Right.
You know, it's a, yeah. So, thank you.
Thank you very much.
All right, cool.
All right.